Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
And all of us have experienced moments of awkwardness. Those times when we cringe with embarrassment over things we've done or how we've looked and perhaps wanted to crawl under a rug. Our guest is Melissa Dahl, and she's written a new book called Cringeworthy, A Theory of Awkwardness. Melissa is a senior editor for New York Magazine's The Cut, where she covers health and psychology. Melissa, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, Melissa, I feel like there must be a pretty interesting story behind why you decided to write this book. Can you explain that to us?
Well, they do say to write what you know.
Right.
A personal theory of why I was drawn to this. My family, when we were growing up, we moved around a lot. And, you know, I think every young person, every kind of teenager especially, is really hyper attuned to social norms and to kind of like what makes something cool at one school and what will make you stand out in a bad way, you know. But we would move every year and a half to 2 years. And so I kept like having to like learn and relearn these, you know, invisible kind of codes to how we're supposed to act. And so I think I just became really, really sensitive to moments that deviate from the norms and maybe more prone to causing them too. It's just been, it's so interesting to me, these moments that, where someone does something a little weird and this like tension kind of fills the room. And then the other thing I'll say, why I was drawn to this is I've been a health and science reporter for more than a decade now, and it seems to me like the feeling of awkwardness seems so universal. It seems like something that we all experience, but I just couldn't find any like really deeply considered theory of it. You know, I had all these questions and I couldn't find the answers to them, so I kind of wanted to find my own answers.
Well, what's your personal definition of awkwardness?
So I have kind of two definitions. I kind of feel like a theory of awkwardness should have, maybe the subtitle should have been something like more like several theories of awkwardness. One of them is, I think that it's self-consciousness, with this kind of underlayer of uncertainty. So it's the self-consciousness kind of aspect of embarrassment where you're just like, oh my gosh, like, is everybody looking at me? You know, wow, like, what did I do? But it's also with this other layer of what am I supposed to do now? There's like no clear rules here. You know, it's not super clear what we should do when, you know, like little moments when, you say goodbye to somebody and then you turns out you're both walking the same way, or like, you know, that thing where like somebody's walking towards you and you're walking towards them and you try to move one way, but they move that way, and you move the other way, but they move that way. And you just kind of go back and forth. There's not like, I guess I'm like a rules lover. These are moments that don't have rules. And so they kind of, they have this uncertainty to them. So that's one of my definitions. The other one though, I think you could also understand it as these are moments when, your presentation of yourself is shown to be incompatible with reality in some way. If you think about some of the situations, you're like, ooh, awkward. People said that about, there was an athlete, I think it was a Russian athlete. I don't want to, stereotype, but I think it was a Russian athlete at the Olympics a couple weeks ago who was, you know, photographed wearing a shirt that said, you know, athletes against doping or something like that. And it turned out this athlete had been doping. So, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. someone put that in our Slack at work at The Cut and said, awkward, you know,
yeah.
it's these little moments where, these two things don't match up. You're trying to say to the world, I'm this person, and then it becomes clear like, oh, no, you're not. So that's another theory of awkwardness.
I know you wanted to understand awkwardness as an emotion rather than as a trait. Explain more about that.
Yeah, so it's just like, that is just how it seems to me. This kind of came about because I was working on this and I got invited to speak at this really wonderfully niche little conference called A Symposium of Neglected Emotions. And it kind of like I'd been sort of passed to the guy who was organizing this, and he knew I was studying awkwardness. And he was like, you should come talk about awkwardness. Like, that's, you know, that's cool. And it just solidified my way of thinking about this. It was the most awesome conference. It was like, it felt like it was like the rejects from Inside Out, you know?
Right.
It's like boredom and suspense and all these other like little emotions we don't talk about. But to me, awkwardness is a feeling, you know, if you think about it, like there certainly are awkward people like the Michael Scotts and the Larry Davids of the world, but they just weren't that interesting to me to write a book about because I don't think they may cause awkwardness in a room, but I don't think they always feel it themselves. Whereas the rest of us, somebody says or does something awkward and it just, this like tension fills the room. You know, someone makes an off color joke and you're just like, Oh God. So I just became interested in that feeling. It just became much more interesting to me to think of it as an emotion.
Well, you just mentioned Larry David, and I was wondering why people tend to watch these shows that have really awkward characters like The Office or, say, like Girls, and they seem to enjoy them, yet they try to avoid uncomfortable situations themselves.
Yeah. So my theory is that this sort of works almost like secondhand exposure therapy. It's sort of like, you know, why do we watch horror movies? You know, we don't want to
get murdered.
No, I don't want to get murdered, no. But I'm watching this thing, you know? So that's kind of my theory. And I talked to folks who I spent a lot of time on this subreddit called R Cringe. And it's just like this collection of like very cringy YouTube videos and stuff. And so I asked some of the moderators, you know, why do you like this? And that's what some of them said, you know, it was like, you get the feeling, but you get it from a distance and then it's over and you're okay and you live through it. So I wonder if it's people who are pretty sensitive to this in real life and maybe are attracted to this kind of entertainment because, I don't know, maybe they can, like, they know they're afraid of this. And, that's kind of my theory that maybe it works a little bit like horror movies. So it's sort of actually, this is a little bit of a tangent, but there's a theory, we don't really know why we dream, but there's a theory about dreaming that this is why dreaming works the way it does. And this is why we have nightmares, that it's us like imagining the worst thing that could happen. And then your brain kind of simulating you living through it. And then supposedly when you wake up and you actually live through it, you'll be able to be okay. So maybe the same kind of thing is true with something cringeworthy like Curb or The Office or anything like that. You're seeing your deepest social fears played out and.
How do you describe the physical aspects of cringing? Because I love some of the descriptions that you had in the book.
So it's so interesting, actually. So one of the things I wanted to do was to really specifically understand the physical aspects of cringing. You know, you kind of blush and you can maybe get a little sweaty and your heart kind of starts to race. And I sometimes can get kind of almost like a tunnel vision, like, oh my God, like I can only see like, I don't know, within like a foot around me. It's just like my vision narrows in just on myself. But some people who study emotions argue that that there aren't specific physical feelings attached to specific emotions. It's more just like we interpret the physical feelings depending on the context we're in. Because if you think about it, like, you know, what I described, it kind of sounds a lot like you could say anger sounds like that too. Maybe your face flushes and you kind of get all like hopped up and heated and your heart races. I'm really intrigued by that area of research because the folks who study this say that because to your body, these feelings literally feel very similar, that you can kind of, the way you conceptualize an emotion actually changes the way you feel it. So it's kind of cool. It kind of gives you some, understanding emotions this way kind of gives you some power over them. So it's kind of a roundabout answer to your question, but I'm obsessed with this emotion science.
Yeah. No, because we've all felt that. We've all felt the flushing face and the racing heartbeat and the sweaty palms. So,
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. As a society, I feel like we all judge people to a certain extent and we classify them as that's the nerd, that's the jock, that's the cool guy. This is the guy who's making money. And then you have, oh, that's the really awkward person. So why is it that some people are more awkward than others?
Well, I mean, so again, like, I'm interested in understanding awkwardness as a feeling, as kind of this internal, invisible thing. So I don't know if, so I'm going to cheat on your question and answer it that way because.
Go ahead. Do it. Go for it.
Because I'm interested in why some people feel more awkward than others, because, I think the answer is, you know, some of us are, those of us who are very attuned to social norms and are very attuned to, oh my gosh, did I do something that upset the social norms of this situation? Did I do something that is really weird and is making me stand out? Those types of people, it's kind of like a low level of social anxiety, and folks with social anxiety, there's research showing this, tend to be more pro-social. They tend to be, you know, nicer. And then they're concerned with, is everybody getting along here? They tend to be more empathetic. They're kind of imagining what others around them are feeling. I mean, they often tend to be imagining what others are thinking about them, but still it's empathy. So they're nice traits. I kind of started this book thinking of how I could get rid of awkwardness, how I could stop feeling this way. And I ended up really being appreciative of it. I would rather be concerned with how others think of me to a reasonable degree than be the sort of person who is like shameless and doesn't care at all what others think of them. So, yeah.
Did your research determine whether an embarrassing situation for one person is always viewed in the same way by those who've witnessed it? I mean, you know, if I feel like, oh boy, I really made an ass of myself, or I really look dumb or something like that. That may be my conception of it. Do you think in most cases it's perceived the same way by those who witnessed it?
There is some super cool research on this, actually. It's this phenomenon that this researcher, Thomas Gilovitz at Cornell, a psychologist who just does awesome work on self-consciousness and this kind of stuff, he calls it the spotlight effect. And it's the idea that we assume more people are paying attention to our embarrassing moments and our flaws and our stupid mistakes than actually are. Not to say nobody is noticing, people notice.
Definitely. And I'm not saying that in a weird way. I just feel like people definitely do notice some traits. Like if a friend of mine were to have a really uncomfortable interaction with a guy we met at a bar or something, I would remember that. I would feel her awkwardness for her, and I would remember that.
Right.
Afterwards.
And you'd probably say, oh, that was awkward, huh?
Right. And we'd probably laugh about it for months, years afterwards.
You would remember it, but this research suggests, and maybe you're going to prove me wrong, but this research suggests that not as many people remember it as you think, and not as many people are like judging you as harshly as you think. And what I love about this research too, this study on the spotlight effect, when I interviewed Thomas Gilovitz, he said it grew out of his work on, he for years was researching regret as kind of another, you know, neglected emotion. And he kind of was talking about how those two things interact. And, you know, what he said to me is kind of, it's cliched advice, but he has the data to back it up. But if what you want to do, if the only thing holding you back is you're afraid what people think, you know, don't, that is a silly reason to not do the thing, because most people don't care. Most people are not paying attention to you, or fewer people than you assume are paying attention to you. So,
if you're trying to recover from an awkward or an embarrassing moment, if you just feel, oh, wow, I feel so bad about something that happened, is it best to keep it to yourself, or is it better to share what happened with someone you love or a friend and just say, get it off your chest?
I think personally, I think it's good to kind of like maybe sit with it for a minute, you know, but then when you're ready, I think it's great to kind of tell someone you trust, someone who isn't going to use that to make fun of you. And sometimes finding that person takes some trial and error, but finding someone you trust, and if you can tell it right, and after a little while, or sometimes even immediately, these stories that are really embarrassing are often really funny too, if you look at them in the right light. And I think the right kind of friend, when they hear this, will say, you know, oh, I am right there with you. You know, like, I have completely been there before. And let me tell you, this that happened to me, you know, like, you're not alone. To me, that's the only way to diffuse the pain that comes along with this feeling. I participated for the book in this exceptionally weird show called Mortified. It's a stage show. It takes place all across the country, and it's a podcast too. And it's people, adults, getting up on stage and reading from their teenage journals, which is very embarrassing.
Right.
But I just was in the show last week. Actually, again, I kind of reprised my performance. And the crowd laughs, you know, it's a comedy show. But it's this laughter that, like, it just feels like self-recognition, which means, as you're sharing these deep, dark, embarrassing secrets from, you know, like, the mind of 13-year-old you, and there's, like, few things more embarrassing than being 13.
That could be more true. I don't want to go back to those days.
Me neither.
I know, but, like, the laughter from the crowd, it means that, like, they recognize themselves in your story, which means that you weren't alone then, and I don't think it's too much to extrapolate from that you aren't alone now either in your feeling weirdness. So I think it's like a really cool feeling that if you let it, if you play it the right way, it can connect you to other people.
I want to describe a very specific situation that I know everybody is in probably every single day, where you mm-hmm. see somebody you kind of know, it's an acquaintance, and you say, yeah. Hey, how are you? And they say, good, how are you? And then you don't know what to do. Then there's like an awkward pause. You don't know if you should fill it. You don't know what you should say next. You don't know if you should just walk away. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Because you don't know them all that well, but you still see them every day.
You need to be polite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a couple of like overarching thoughts about that. So one thing is so there's all this research linking nervousness and self-consciousness. And I think when you get into those situations, you start to feel really, you start to get nervous, which makes you self-conscious, which makes you nervous, which makes you self-conscious. I mean, this is true. This is like there's research showing these things kind of go round and round and exacerbate each other. You kind of zero in on like, oh my God, what do I say now? What am I, you know, is he looking at my hands? Are my hands weird? Like the silence is like ticking on for longer. As long as you keep zeroing in on those moments, it's just going to get weirder and weirder. So the folks who study this say, you know, to kind of as much as you can, if this is partially caused by self-consciousness, it can be broken by focusing on anything but yourself. So I don't know, it's not that difficult to ask a question or, you know, to just divert the attention away from yourself and that should help.
Talk about the weather.
You totally could talk about the weather.
Well, or then like if it's, what about after you guys say, oh, it's sunny out, this is great. Then where do you go? Then you're in the same position again.
I wonder if it'll be sunny tomorrow.
And then you're trying to walk back to your car.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess like I used to really get flummoxed by that stuff too. And I think part of it is just going a little easier on yourself. Is just sort of genuinely like seeking a connection, you know, maybe just if it's a coworker, like asking them, what are you working on lately? And like genuinely meaning it, like you're like genuinely being interested in what they're saying and not thinking of what you're going to say next, but just kind of asking follow-up questions from them. One of the ridiculous things I did in the book was take an improv class, which was kind of, the point was to face exactly this kind of fear that used to completely drive me insane of oh my God, what am I supposed to say? I'm on the spot. I'm no good on my feet. And I don't know. I feel like I'm cured. It doesn't bother me anymore. You just kind of like, it can be anything around you, you know, or just something, I don't know. You could, here in New York, a lot of, we complain about the trains, you know, the trains are late, you know, how did you get here is a good one. I think in California, that's a big one too, was how did you get here? What highway did you take? I don't know. There just doesn't. The number one key is to stop zeroing in on yourself and what you're going to say or what you're going to do next, and kind of just look out and look at the person in front of you and look at the things around you. So it's like not like step by step advice, but it's like overarching advice that has really been helpful for me.
No, it makes sense. I know you also say that little humiliations can bring people together if we let them. Explain more about that.
Well, so that is sort of my whole love with this show Mortified I was talking about. It really kind of goes back to that, when I started this project, I understood awkwardness. I was understanding it as an emotion, but I was kind of understanding it as this like really isolating feeling. I understood it as this feeling that means you are in danger of kind of losing your status or like, you know, getting kicked out of your group or whatever. And I think that's true, but the truth is that everybody feels this way to different degrees and at different times. And so like I was saying earlier, I think the only way to stop this from driving you nuts, if you're the kind of person who it drives you nuts, is to kind of just share it with somebody else, you know, to take that embarrassing memory, try to look at it from a different angle and see the humor in it, and then share that with somebody else. And you'll chance. The really cool thing about doing press for this book has been people have just like interrupted me and jumped in and just been like, oh my God, that reminds me of this time when I did this. When I was recording the audiobook, the producer kept interrupting me. It was like, oh, I have to tell you, this reminds me of this time when I did this.
It's like the one thing that really unites us, because we've all been awkward.
Yeah.
Everybody
it's
has.
Universal.
But you know what one of the most awkward situations is ever? First dates. So I bet you have some pretty good stories about some uncomfortable dates, because I think everybody does. How did you get through uncomfortable dates?
The only thing I can think of is just like a certain degree of earnestness and enthusiasm kind of cuts through awkwardness. And what I mean by that is like, if you really mean it, like if you really are like on a first date, if you really are trying to be warm towards this person and trying to find out about them, I think the first dates can feel awkward because you're so worried about like your self presentation. But I really think a lot of this comes down to just taking the focus off of yourself. And I don't mean that in like you're obsessed with yourself, don't be such a narcissist kind of way. It makes sense, you know, you're trying to put your best self forward. But the truth is, it just makes this weirder. So the best first dates I've had is when I've tried to just find out about this person in front of me, and you know, and hopefully if they are a polite human, they'll reciprocate, and then you can talk together. And it's that kind of the same advice, but it helps me.
are there conversations that we're avoiding because of fear of tripping into an uncomfortable space? I mean, conversations about race or religion or gender or class, those kinds of things.
Yeah, that was something I worked on this book for two or 3 years or something like that. And when you say the word awkward, we tend to think about these things we've mostly talked about, you know, like you don't know what to say to an acquaintance, you don't know what to say on a first date or whatever. But I was kind of tracking how we use the word, and I was seeing that people use it to describe like matters of just like deep discomfort. You know, while I was writing this, there was a headline on the New York Times homepage that said, it said something like, why we're awkward. So it was like, click, you know, that's what I'm studying right now.
Right.
And it was turned out to be this video about racial bias, which I was not expecting. Or the comedian Howie Kamau Bell has, for years, he went on like a whole college tour. He wrote a whole book about this. He thinks that Americans should be having more of what he calls awkward conversations. And this is where I think it gets to the definition of the like self-presentation versus the reality, because I think sometimes we hesitate to enter into these things, first of all, because we don't want to offend somebody, but we also don't want to say the wrong thing, because I think it comes down a little bit to a fear of how that's going to make us look. You know, like I want to think of myself as this like, you know, woke liberal person. And if I say something that reveals like a bias I didn't even know I had, that is just deeply uncomfortable. And that is a horrible feeling. So I think that actually, in the end, awkward, I say this a lot in my book, that awkward feels like such an inadequate word for these types of conversations, but it can almost work to our advantage because it's, we can kind of like reframe if assuming all parties are coming together in good faith, and hopefully people are, we can kind of reframe the feeling and, okay, it's going to be awkward. It's going to be uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean it's negative. That doesn't mean it's bad. And you're going to face maybe some things about yourself or about the person you're talking to that are going to be uncomfortable and not fun to sit through, but that doesn't mean it's bad. So it was really interesting to me to track how we've used that this word in really serious matters.
I read that awkward people read faces differently and therefore misread social cues. And it was explaining that people who are more awkward tend to look at a person's chin when they talk and not at their eyes. How can you overcome this? Where are you supposed to look? Because sometimes it's awkward when you're just looking at somebody's eyes.
Well, so the thing is, there is some, it kind of connected to that research on the way emotions work in your body. One of the things I wanted to find out is how to like read faces and how to get better at like reading emotions on people's faces. But there is some new research that says that maybe, you know, that actually like we're all kind of guessing at reading the emotions on each other's faces. Most of the time we are pretty good at guessing because we have the context and, you know, we have the tone of voice and all that stuff. But the truth is we're always guessing, and you shouldn't beat yourself up if like you read the look on somebody's face wrong, because I'm sure we all do this. Like my feelings don't always match the look on my face. People have read my face wrong. So it makes sense that I'm reading other people's faces wrong. I mean, I think when I've read that about like autistic people tend to look at something like, don't really look at the eyes or something like that. I think again, that's kind of not what I'm interested in. Just knowing that like you kind of just have to ask what someone is feeling, or just remember to, you're always guessing. Remember that like you think someone like gave you the stink eye or whatever, but you maybe they just remembered, they remember they left something at home they needed. You don't know what's going on in someone else's mind.
Yeah.
And for me, like that has been really kind of freeing in a way to, I guess again, it comes back to like, it's not about you. Just don't think about yourself all the time. You don't know what's going on in someone else's head.
Yeah. You know, I have to share with you, years ago, I was emceeing an event and something happened. I don't even remember the specifics of what happened, but I came home and I told my other daughter, who was about 4 at the time, that I was just feeling bad because this event hadn't gone the way that I had wanted it to go. And I felt bad about whatever it was that had happened and that had been embarrassing. And she just looked at me and with the wisdom of a child, she just said, "Well, nobody died, did they?" And laugh. And I said, "Well, you know what? You're right. Nobody died." And I thought, you know, this is just really perfect. And all these years later, she's almost 30 now. And all these years later, what I remember about the event was her wisdom in saying nobody died in sloughing off the, you know, what I thought at the time was really serious. And like I said, I can't even remember what the embarrassment was at the time. So anyway, but, you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. And we always like to ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? I mean, what is it that you've learned in this journey in trying to figure out what you can about awkwardness and embarrassment and cringeworthy moments that nobody could have told you?
Nobody could have told me that these are moments to treasure. You know, we are all walking around trying, you know, God bless us, just poor little humans just walking around trying our best. we're trying to present the best version of ourselves to each other. And there is a bit of a facade. We're all giving each other, you know, like we all kind of put on a face. You know, I put on my work face when I go in to work. I put on my friend face when I go out to see my friends. I have just become almost like desperate for these weird little moments, these little moments of just like human real weirdness that sneak through. And, you know, somebody drops a plate, or, you know, somebody makes a joke and it doesn't go over well, or somebody trips or whatever. I just love those moments. I mean, I think that this awkwardness, embarrassment, if we look at it in a slightly cockeyed way, it can be a route to finding joy and just the absurdity of being human. It's like a weird thing we do here on the planet. If you look at it in the right way, you can just find some real happiness in it. And I never would have expected that before I started researching this.
Right. Yeah. You must have been smiling and laughing so much more with the research for this book than anything.
Oh my God. Yes. I mean, like, writing sucks. But every time I would sit down, I would like read my material or like notes and like read what I'd written the night before. And I would just like crack up. Like, we are just little creatures out here trying our best. And overgrown, over-intelligent apes. And I don't know, we're all doing our best. And these little moments are just the little mistakes that I just have come to live for. It's pretty funny.
They're an honest part of humanity. And,
right.
And
nobody's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think sharing awkward moments definitely makes you feel better about the ones you've had yourself. You don't feel so alone. Yeah. So I think people should be open about them and sharing them.
Yeah. And it brings people closer together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I mean, that's actually like what the research shows about how you, I mean, it's obvious, I suppose, but what the research shows about how you make a friend is like, you disclose a little bit more about yourself and the other person discloses a little bit more, you know, like you share a little more, they share a little more, you let them in a little more, they let, you know, you in a little more. And again, that's a little obvious, but that's like, that's also the science. That's how you make a friend. So,
friends I have, I think, have just been friends that I've shared a bunch of uncomfortable, awkward moments with.
Mm-hmm. That's really it.
Yeah. And all it is.
And they nod in agreement and they're,
and you can remember
so
those good times. It's just a collection of awkward moments.
That's what life is.
It's just reframing this to just think of like, we're all just doing our best. That's hilarious. So.
Right. Right. Melissa, how can people find you online and how can people buy the book?
So I'm at Melissa Dahl on Twitter. I spend way too much time on Twitter. So if you tweet at me, I will definitely see you because I'm on there all the time. And you can buy my book at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, your favorite little indie store. Any of those places. I would love it if you bought the book too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for joining us. We've been talking with Melissa Dahl. Her book is called Cringeworthy, A Theory of Awkwardness. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You've been listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you for joining us.